Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for June 16th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is my partner and my favorite buddy, Jim Allen. What's happening, man?
Your favorite buddy. I'm glad I'm at the top of the list this week. That's cool.
This week? List?
Okay, list. I'm feeling special.
If you know that there's a list, you better show it to me. Give it back. That's mine.
Well, I'm hiding it from you because I don't want you to know any better. I don't want you to know who your real friends are.
All right. So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. You know, World Cup started, so I got that going on. I've been, you know, splitting my time baseball and sports and soccer and stuff. So really enjoying the beautiful weather. It does change from all the rain. So what's going on, man?
Oh, I'm just in a royal mood.
Oh. Wow. You're living like a king, baby.
Living like a king. Well, not living like one, but I'm thinking like one. How's that?
Okay, that's good.
All right. On this week's show, we've got an interview with reliever Carlos Rosa of the Lotte Marines, and we're going to discuss the Marines and Interleague and a lot more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
You got something for me, man?
I got a trivia question for you.
Which
for you, again, because it's you, I believe it's probably fairly easy, but it's tricky for our listeners.
Tricky. Give it to me. Give me the tricky one.
All right. Now, this past week, Jason Standridge blanked one of his old teams, or his old team, the Hanshin Tigers, 2-0, giving him wins over 12 NPB teams. Who is the only other foreign pitcher to have wins against 12 NPB teams?
Ah, you got one I actually know the answer to.
I knew you knew that.
I happened to be on the desk that night and I saw it flash across the Kyoto copy. So the answer is Seth Greisinger.
Right. Who is now the Lotte Marine. So yeah, I knew you would know that, but I knew that it was good stuff. Jim throwing his hands in the air and waving them like he just doesn't care.
Absolutely. I'm celebrating. I'm doing I got the trivia question down.
Now, are you telling me you only got that because you saw it flash on the wire, or you kind of...
Pretty much. I would have had to guess otherwise. That was one of the ones I actually knew.
Well, good. Well, I did see it as well, and I saw it in the Japanese paper, so I picked that one off real fast, and I forgot I had it. So I was looking for another question, which I probably save and put in my pocket for another day, but it was fun. It was fun to do the research.
I did that last week, and then I couldn't find the pocket.
No, I think what you did is you duplicated your pockets or your trivia questions.
Well, I did that. Two weeks ago, John had a question. I went, wow, that's an idea for a question. Instead of writing it down, I just said, okay, I got a question. And then come the next week's show, I thought of the question of 2 weeks before. Yeah. I pulled the one out of my memory bank, and my memory bank had been, you know, overdrawn.
Yeah, I think the account had been deleted and somebody else was using it.
Somebody with an IQ. Yeah. All right,
this past week I went out to talk to fourth-year right-hander Carlos Rosa, and of course I overrolled my R's when I talked to him and said his name on the interview, but I said Carlos Rosa, but I think there's not so many, not so much rolling of the R.
He's just a Rosa.
Yeah. Now, this is a guy, he's been doing well since he has been in Japan. He's got a 2.48 ERA in 3-plus seasons here. Got a good...
He calls the second season, uses the S word.
Yeah. Hey, he's been here 4 years, or 3-plus years, so we'll put it that way. And he's got a good strikeout-to-walk ratio. You know, he basically keeps the ball in the park with 10 home runs allowed in nearly 160 innings in Japan. His area of concern this year has been the strikeouts-to-walks. The walk rate is up much higher than I think he'd want to see it. But then again, his batting average against is 179, and his batting average on balls hit in play is 190, and that's pretty good. You'd like to see him get that walk rate down, but he's been pretty steady. He's been a guy you don't really think too much about, but he comes on, and like he's going to tell you in the interview, they like to use him to pitch to the foreign players or to, you know, pitch the eighth inning. He likes setting up. He was charged with three runs the other day. I think it was Thursday night on a ball. He actually left the, he left with the bases loaded and the next guy gave up a fly ball to center field and Yoshifumi Okada, who usually catches, I think it was him who was in center field, and he usually catches everything he touches and he dove and had the ball bounce off his glove and the, we had another clearing the bases situation. So three runs came around, but he wasn't really, yeah, he wasn't really into, he wasn't really in the game to give up that hit, but he put the guys on. So now he was kind of reluctant to do the interview. And I talked to him when I went out to talk to Luis Cruz earlier this season, and he was kind of worried about his English. And there are some parts that are probably a little bit hard to catch, but when I didn't understand him, I asked him what was going on, and so we clarified it. So let's go ahead and take a listen to what he had to say.
All right, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Carlos Rosa. I like saying your name.
thank you.
Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, this is your fourth year in Japan. Now, how comfortable are you in your role with the Marines?
Oh, pretty good. Single, the first one for me, like here. We talked a couple days ago with Cruz. The more thing I like is the teams are teamy. Like, we really good teaming. I have fun with a couple guy friends. And the role is pretty good. I mean, this is my first thing to give me a chance here. First year, I got really good years. Second year, I got, you know, pitching that much, but they give me third chance. So, I'm not fail. I'm going to have a good, like, really good year. 3 years, so I was keeping, trying to do my thing and not try to change it too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, your role is usually coming in as a middle reliever. Have they asked you about closing and being the closer?
Yeah, before the season started, they asked me, they told me, like, we don't know what pitching we're using, Nishino, or you, be the closer, but he's doing good job. I mean, I'm not gonna mad at me. Problem with us. I feel more comfortable with 8 inning. I like being more settled guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's kind of the same thing because, like, I mean, it's 8, 9, it means a 1 or 2 round lead.
Right.
It's not big, like a big difference. But I feel more comfortable to be settled guy here.
Okay. All right, good. Now, you came here, and like you said, you didn't have a great first year. You didn't have all that great a second year. But I think you did well. But what adjustments have you made since your first year here?
I think you're here, you have to trust, right? I mean, if you have decent fastball, decent pitch, you know how to be having like nasty stop.
Not nasty.
Not nasty stop.
Just,
I mean,
average, right?
Yeah. I mean, throwing strike, I think this is number one point. Like, I learned a lot of this game, a lot. Like Japanese, a little bit different to where we come from. But I learned a lot. I think that's the adjustment. Like, we have to be learn how they play, how they do it here, how they hitting do it, like they want to do.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a one to point.
All right. So now you started with the manager Nishimura, and now you changed to. I mean, there was a change. Nishimura stepped down. You have the manager Ito, and he was a former catcher. How has that changed for you?
I think for me, if you compare the first one, this one, I think I feel much better because he know how to roll a bullpen way better than Nishimura. I don't say he's bad, but I think it's Ito-san, he's better how to roll a bullpen. Like, he's put him in a situation like he know he's comfortable with me. I'm comfortable too because he gave me the chance, so that's what we're looking for.
And, I mean, does he talk about how to get you warmed up and how many times you get up in a game or how many times you get up in a week? Does he pretty much manage that too?
No, he say, like, basically, like, he, I'm basically the settle guy, so he want me to pitch, like, the Gaijin guy, like the American guy or Latin guy, because they know they have a power, so I guess I'm a little bit power pitcher with my fastball. So they told me like he wanted to face that guy like 3, 4, and 5 hitting. So that's what he told me, but he's not about to say nothing how many times. I know Wamana that much, maybe. I go like 2 or 1 time to be in the bullpen, like, if you don't. Depending on what's the game, close. If we lose for 1 run, they tell me maybe I pitch. If we win, like, several guy, I throw the 8 inning. I think he's doing a really good job with the bullpen. I like how they brought it.
Good, good. All right, now, as far as catchers, a lot of people like the rookie catcher, Yoshida, and you've got a couple other catchers, Kanazawa, Emura, and the veteran, Satozaki. How is the development of the young catchers going?
They're doing good job, both. I mean, all the three catchers, young guys, they're doing a really good job. But, you know, better now. I think the relationship with the catcher and pitchers, I think, is really important in the game. I think that's really good. And you see that team doing a really good job. And Moore, I think, I mean, I know Mike, like better now, I mean, rookie catcher, because I would most of the time check my pitches. If I do comfortable throwing the pitch of the car, I check. So
what do you mean by check?
Like check, like if you call me fastball and one, so fastball,
and shake it up.
Yeah, shake it up.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think they're doing really good. Yeah, you know, they have to learn more. I mean, you know, they're really good, but they have to learn more in the game, how to, what kind of like situation that want to the pitch, what pitch you want to on that situation, you know. Just about, I think it's okay. I think they really good.
All right, now, the ace, Naruse, was sent down to the farm yesterday. He was deactivated, and he has not had good success with one of your catchers, but is it more about him or is it the catchers?
I'm not really. I mean, I don't know. This in Japan sometimes I never say it's a catcher fault.
Right.
Because if you call the pitch, if you don't want to throw, just shake it. You know.
Shake him out.
I mean, brother, I think they know how like that good combination. Yesterday, like the last 3 or 4 start, he's not really pitching that good. I don't know. I don't know how you say that, but for me, catching pitchers, they have to be having good combination. If you don't, it's not going to be nothing work in the mouth.
All right. So now you've had some success here. Would you consider going back to the States to try to pitch again?
No, I think I'll be finished my career in Japan. I mean, I think I'm one. I'm be like supposed to be like having chance in big league. So a fight. I think we had too much competition over there. So I feel I'll be comfortable right now here. I don't mind still be finishing my career in Japan. I mean, if they give me a chance, I don't mind. I don't want to come back, but depending on like with the situation.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I don't mind.
All right.
But I wish I could, if I go straight to the big league, I wish I go America for sure.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people want to go there and play. Now, you pitch in a pretty windy stadium I think I've heard the mound is okay there. What's your favorite stadium to pitch in, and what's your favorite mound?
My favorite one is Sapporo Dome.
Why is that?
Sapporo Stadium.
Why?
The mound. It's American mound.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's not sassy like Japan. But Japan mound, like, I deal with the mound right now, but if they want to change, I'll be happy to do like American style, American side. Yeah, like, because they do like the whole, I don't know, comfortable picture with the whole, how the Japanese doing.
Right.
But like in Sapporo, this is American mound. This is my favorite stadium. It's good for the pitcher because it's big, and the mound is really good because it's American side.
All right, well, you've been doing really well out in the Chiba Marine Stadium mound, so we hope you have continued success.
Oh, thank you. I hope you too. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Carlos, and good luck and keep up the good work, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks again, Carlos. Always a pleasure to talk to you and a great chance to listen to your chatting with John. I really enjoyed that.
Good. I mean, it was kind of quiet. Like I said, he was kind of shy and bashful about the whole thing to start off with, but I think he kind of got into it. And of course, in this case, I like to do it with most of the guys, but in this case, I broke down the questions and said, okay, this is what I'm going to talk to you about. So, you know, get ready. And I think he had some ideas and, I like what he said about not having to have nasty stuff, but what was the thing that really caught your ear?
Well, first of all, I always love talking to Carlos. He's always positive. He's always, he's positive and he's very thoughtful. And as you said, he is, I think when if he knows it's on the radio or something, he's, I think, a little self-conscious about his English, but less so when you just normally talk to him.
I think so, yeah.
We had a long chat. I was thinking about a story, but I couldn't ever quite find a hook, talking about how he came to Japan and how he started in baseball. And the brief thing about that is I asked him, he's a Dominican guy. And I figured when he asked you, when did you start playing baseball? I was going to expect, eight or nine. And he said 14.
That's late.
That was late. I mean, he was working on his parents' farm, and a scout basically came and dragged him off the farm, and his parents didn't want him to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But, he tried it and he liked it, and they said okay, and they were still kind of hesitant because they needed him, they needed him as labor, basically,
right,
to feed everybody. And, fortunately, his labor in baseball put a lot more food on the table.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It was a good story, and he was from the country, and, the town where he was learning how to play, like little academy, was in the city, and he felt like, he was kind of a out-of-towner and a country, kind of a country bumpkin, and he didn't know about city life, and it was really lonesome. It was quite interesting, but, that's a story that'll move on, but anyway, listening to him talk about the team made me think about what Randy Williams said a couple of weeks ago about the Lions and their camaraderie and being such a special group. And aren't you getting this feeling, when foreign players talk about their teammates, that it seems to be the norm here in Japan that people love their teams? I mean, they think they all seem to feel this special bond with their teammates.
I wasn't, now that you bring that up, it reminds me that Chris Narveson said that, and Randy Williams said that, and so now, that does
seems to be the norm. These guys, everybody thinks their team is special, and which is, I think, really kind of interesting, and they all pull together. And the last time I heard anybody comment on his team's lack of cohesion, was when a foreign player, and I don't remember who it was, he slammed the 2005 Giants, which was a, just a star heavy team that finished fifth for the first time. It was the first Giants team to finish fifth since 1979.
Yeah.
And they put up some gaudy numbers. Like Kokobo was there and Tuffy Rhodes was there. Abe had a big year and this and that.
Yohara was there.
Right. Kiyohara was there, and it seems like, but it was really weird that, somebody said, the hitters are just out there putting up good, trying to put up good numbers, and nobody's playing for the team. So that kind of stood out. And then I guess the other example was, in 2009 with the Marines, when Bobby Valentine, when the Marines were trying to get Bobby Valentine to forfeit his contract by hook or by crook. And it was like the whole season was like in a couple of episodes of The Prisoner, that iconic British drama from the, I guess it was from the late 60s. And
thank you. You're doing something before my time, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
Thank you
essentially, it was a psycho spy drama, and you didn't know where anything was, and Every event in the story was tinged with paranoia and secret agendas, and Bobby was like, trying to think of who were the players on his side and who wasn't on his side. So that's probably the only other exception I could find. But that was, it, it, it was kind of interesting that he said it, and I guess now I'll start looking for that more and more. The other thing which I found interesting, I know you got the kind of answer you were looking for as far as roles go. Yes, I like a clearly defined role, and this is it.
How do you know what I was looking for?
Well, let's see. I took a good guess.
You've only been doing the show with me for 3+ years, and you know.
And I still got. I've been brainwashed, and I still got a dirty mind. So.
That's a bad one, man. Don't ever say that again. I don't want to hear that. That's bad.
Wow. Okay. So, it's not like there's a schism between John and I when we talk about roles. It's just that, sometimes we get on a subject and we sort of take opposite positions naturally. I don't care. I like clearly defined rules, but I also don't care if those rules are obvious to anybody except the people, the manager and the coaches and the players.
Right.
I mean, just because we can't figure them out doesn't mean they aren't there.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay. One year I tried to figure out Akira in 1995. I tried to figure out Akira Ogi's roles with the Oryx Blue Wave in their first championship year. Whoa, it was a mystery. But, if you work at it, you can kind of figure it out how things fit into place. You can see the pieces of the puzzle or the Rubik's Cube or whatever. So anyway, the problem in Japan, and I think this is, and correct me if I'm wrong, what gets you is that roles seem to be learned through osmosis. players in Japan get used to how they are used until they aren't used that way. And no one says anything. One way or the other, Japanese players are, for the most part, expected to do what they're told, when they're told, and just live with it. We're talking to the Japanese players. Well, what were you told about your role in the team? Nothing. What was going to be different this year when you moved into the 5 spot? Nothing. What did the manager tell you? Nothing. This is what we're used to.
Right.
And I think for the foreign players, they're used to a little more commitment. Although, as I said, there's still ball four sort of lack of communication going on in the States sometimes now and then. But anyway, yeah. So it was interesting to hear his view on the roles and hear how the managers adapted. I thought that was really, that was a nice combination, little 1-2 punch in your chat there, John.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't know if I was looking for a particular answer, but I did want to know. I mean, I wanted to make things easy on him, too. I didn't want to make the questions too difficult for him. And I wanted him to be able to explain his feelings about what he's doing. So I thought that was a good question for him.
You did well. Yeah, you did well in that respect.
But I did, like I said, I mentioned before you brought up your, what caught your eye. I said, he said, hey, look, you don't need to have nasty stuff in Japan. Mm. And that really stood out for me because you always think about guys who are overpowering or who come over from the States and throw hard. And then you always hear, or not always, I should say, I shouldn't generalize like that, but a lot of times the announcers and the former players who are analysts always say, well, the guy throws hard, but he has no idea where the ball's going. He doesn't have good control. And if you sit on pitches, you can time it. And if you can time it, now all you got to do is find the location and get the bat on it. And it makes it, they just make it sound so easy to hit the guys. And then you see no matter how hard they throw, if they don't have good control, if their balls are straight, they don't have a lot of movement, they end up getting knocked around. And he said, you don't have to have nasty stuff. You just have to be able to throw strikes. And I thought, well, it's not that simple. You can't just throw strikes up there either because they're going to get knocked. I mean, you have your fielders chasing balls all over the place. Now, they're going to catch some of them, but you made it sound so easy. So
yeah, definitely not easy. But certainly, I think, I'm interrupting you briefly here. You're used to that.
You're telling me.
It's normal. This is not standard operating procedure. So, yeah. So, I mean, the thing that he said, getting used to Japan, was really interesting because so many guys tell me this and so many managers say this about foreign players, especially pitchers, getting them used to Japanese swings because they're looking for something different. We got this last week from Randy Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 2 weeks ago? From Randy Williams, you know, you get rid of the cutter because people aren't taking big swings that he needs them to keep him off the, you know, he doesn't need that little wrinkle to keep him off the fat of the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not taking big swings and they were just eating his cutter alive.
Right.
So, you know, they are different swings and they require different adjustments. So it's not the same, the batter's approach. And as he said, learning what the batters are trying to do is so important.
Yeah. And I know he said, you know, he didn't say it, but I think he said being able to throw strikes and just having good control and keeping the ball out of peril and working the corners. So don't throw the balls right down the middle, but be able to throw your strikes. I mean, obviously he didn't say it, but I think translating, and I think what was lost in a little bit of translation was hitting the corners. And I think being able to live on those corners, and I think he's done that well. And I also liked what he said about the previous manager, Nishimura. He said he wasn't as good with the bullpen, and I was so happy that he was willing to be so candid with us in the show like that, because he basically said Ito runs the bullpen so much better that I'm so much happier.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that eighth inning, he likes coming in the eighth inning. He likes being the setup guy, that they did talk to him about being the closer and said you might be in that role, and he was ready to accept it. But he's a happy participant in the setup role, and that's where he thinks he's probably most effective, I had the opinion. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's a factor in his success. You want to put a guy in a role that, in my opinion, he's not comfortable with. Although I think he could probably close a little bit for them, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
Because it's just a matter of getting the guys. Like he said, we talked after I turned the tape recorder off, and he said, hey, look, if I have to throw to the 4, 5, and 6 guys, and that's the ninth inning, I'm fine with that. But, you know, I sometimes face those guys in the eighth inning, and it's no different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was a really good point. I mean, there were a lot of good points. And as like I said, with Carlos, you always get very thoughtful answers.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's a little shy and you don't think about it. And he was always just, hi, I'm fine. How are you? Fine. Boom, I'm gone. But when he does stop and talk, you get your money's worth. Of course, our money's worth is nothing because we're not paying, but we get more than our money's worth.
Right. Hopefully we give the listeners their money's worth. Maybe even more.
I hope more.
Hey, well, their time.
But their time's worth.
That's right. Their time's
worth. That's
been
better.
Yeah. Now, I did talk to him a little bit more about the catching situation. And, you know, he said that the manager is really hard on the catchers there. And, in fact, I saw an interview with Ito that was on TV. It was on Pro Yaku News, I think, on Friday, and Ito said, look, really, because they've used 5 catchers this year, and that's the most in MPB. I think 3 other teams have used 4.
Okay.
And Ito said, look, we've been waiting for somebody to show up who we could put in there and just pencil them in every day and then give them a break when it's necessary. But we haven't had a guy step up on both sides, you know, the offensive side and the defensive side. And calling games has been an issue, and hitting has been an issue. They haven't been able to get the offense. So some guys, they've just been working different guys in the lineup, in and out of the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But Carlos said, yeah, in a couple instances, they have yanked the catchers like after an inning, not the pitchers.
Sure.
That was this season. And I don't remember what year it was, but I remember I don't think it was Nishimura, but so it would have had to have been Bobby Valentine, which I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but the battery gave up a hit and the manager came out and changed the catcher, not the pitcher.
It's not that unusual in Japan. I've seen some interesting, I mean, the Marines, much of what we've seen from the Marines has centered around the catchers and Satozaki becoming the number one catcher and so on and so forth. Lots of long stories there in the transition from from manager to manager.
Right.
So I saw weirder stuff before Valentine showed up. Bobby did a really clever thing one year, which was when he had Tasuku Hashimoto. who probably would have been the everyday catcher because he had the most beautiful swing imaginable. You know, it was a picture-perfect swing. He just was frequently injured. He and Satozaki were fighting for a job, and what Valentine did most of the 2005 season, might have been 2004, but what he did the first year and a half he was here was let almost change them every day. And in the day before the, you know, whoever was on the bench that day would sit with the next day's starting pitcher and go over the other team's batters.
Right.
During that game. And I thought that was really clever. I mean, that was a very interesting way of going about it. And Satozaki eventually did win the job essentially because Hashimoto probably wasn't quite as good defensively and was never healthy. But, but always weird things going on with Lotte's catchers, and Satozaki's now about 70 years old. So it's hard to imagine him keep why they're looking for somebody to step up.
Yeah, they're basically phasing him out. I think we know that. We've seen it, sure. I mean, he's been the best offensive guy, but yeah, go ahead.
Of course, we've talked about, you know, the catchers before, on the show and different things with catchers and how they're run in Japan. And I think it is very typical for Japanese managers to expect their catchers to take charge and to blame them for pitchers' failures.
Yeah.
And Alex Ramirez said that he learned from his former manager, his first manager with the Yakult Swallows, Tsutomu Wakamatsu, to study the catchers, at least, if not more than he studied the pitchers, you know, to find the team's approach to him.
Right, and we talked to Greg Boomer Wells a couple years back on the show, and he said he didn't always pay attention to who he was catching, but when he noticed that they were pitching him differently, he'd look back and see who was catching and say, oh, it's the young guy. Okay, I have to change my approach. So we know from those two guys in particular, Alex Ramirez and Greg Boomer Wells, that even the hitters try to pay a lot of attention to who's catching.
Now, the one Pacific League executive told me that the essential element, you know, is getting the pitcher to trust the catcher.
Mm.
And until that happens, until the catcher, you know, can show that he's got what it takes, you can't really use him. So they've got guys, and on that team, they've got a kid in the minor leagues who hits like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't let him catch. They can't bring him up because he's a catcher and nobody wants to throw to him.
Mm.
Okay. Now the problem here is that's such a heavy burden in Japan that I think it's heavier than the States because they put so much pressure on the catchers to be the game manager. And it's hard for a young kid to manage the pitcher and control the running game and hit and do with all that other stuff when the manager's basically screaming at him all the time.
Well, that's what Ginji Sumitani of the Sabre Lions said. He said when he came up, and he was an 18-year-old starting, and he said, geez, I couldn't even figure out what I was supposed to do, and they were yelling at me to control the infielders and position them and take care of the pitcher and call pitches and hit, and he said he was overwhelmed.
Yeah, and he won, and they gave him the job, which was pretty weird. And he really wasn't much of a hitter, and it's kind of amazing how he got to be a regular. I guess he was a sort of the lesser of many evils. Here's the thing. You know, it may be a huge difference from one catcher to another. I know in the United States that recent studies have shown in the big leagues that the differences in catchers' ERAs.
Mm-hmm.
are not really sustainable. You know, that if you took 10 catchers who led their team 1 year or had the best ERA with a given pitcher 1 year, and the next year you would find that it was very unlikely that those guys would have the best ERA on the team or with those common pitchers.
Yeah.
So it tends to vary a lot. But that being said, Japan is a different context. As I said, the swings are different. Guys are less there's more trickery involved at the plate.
Right.
You know, because guys aren't trying to put every potential pitch, you know, look, this one can be hit over the fence. I'm going to give it, you know, I'm going to lean into it. They're trying to make good contact, meet it with the bat. As I say, just meet in Japan.
Right.
which I think is kind of like ground beef, you know, just meat.
Right.
But I think there's more pressure here, and that may create a situation where the best catchers are consistently better in terms of the defensive value they add to their team in calling games. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we talked about it before because I said there was a dearth of quality catchers a while back. This is before we started doing the show. I think we talked about it at the office one day, and I said, look, I think I was watching Shinosuke Abe of the Yomiuri Giants call a game, and I said, I basically watched the swings of a batter, a particular batter, and then I watched the way he adjusted and called pitches in certain locations, and they got me out easily. And I said, that's why Abe's such a good catcher. You see the way he looked at the swings of the batter, and he used that against the guy. And I said, there's not a lot of good catchers out there. I think they're using these catchers and trying to squeeze all the life out of him. You look at like Tanishige, who realizes probably this year he's not that great a player anymore, and he's not putting himself in, similar to the way that Atsuya Furuta did in his last season when he was a manager and player.
Yeah, if they want to make you a manager, it means that they probably would prefer you to manage than catch.
Yeah, get the hint there, buddy. So anyway, where all this is going is I had a Twitter conversation with the Lotte Marines blogger, Chiba Craig, and he brought out some strong evidence in some numbers to back his position, which I really respected. And we were talking about Yoshihisa Naruse, the ace of the Marines. And Naruse, in a game on May 16th up at Sapporo Dome, gave up 4 homers in 2-plus innings. And I said, I said, well, geez, I have to start thinking, is there some kind of injury with Naruse, because I can't imagine why he would be this bad. And Chiba Craig came back with a tweet that said, well, he's pitching to a catcher who he's got really bad numbers with. And like I said, he did back up the numbers, and you did a little bit of research, and you said that Naruse, in 3 games with Satozaki as catcher, his ERA is 3.54.
Mm-hmm.
With Yoshida, the rookie catcher, in 3 games, it's 2.75. Mm-hmm. And then with Emura, in 2 games, it's 5.62, but with Mr. Kanazawa in 3 games, the ERA was 9.18, and he's given up a ton of home runs. And I just say, hey, look, when it comes down to it, the manager is not going to send the catcher to the minors or check and see if it's somebody's injured. He's going to deal with the pitcher. And as Carlos said in the interview, he said, look, if you're not comfortable throwing something, shake the guy off. But in the end, you're the one who's throwing the ball, and it's about you. It's about your stuff. No matter how bad they might be calling the game, it's also about execution of the pitch and location and velocity and all that stuff. The catcher can't do anything about those things. He can only what? Hope.
Well, the other dynamic here is Naruse and Ito.
Ito, you know, the manager.
They had the manager. They had a thing going on last year where basically Ito said, you know, I'm the manager, and you know, you're gonna follow the line, and if you don't want, you can do it in the minors. And he said basically, okay, fine with me. And he left them in the minors for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Well, without any, you know, reason other than, you know, he went down to work on his form, and he didn't pitch.
Yeah, tune up without the tune.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah. That tune in no notes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I did talk to Carlos. He said they're really hard on the catchers. They're really strict with them. And he didn't say it, and I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't want to give away some of the business secrets there. But I wouldn't be surprised if they were calling pitches from the bench anyway, because they have one of the best former catchers in NPB history in Takeshi Nakamura as a coach. And you're squinting, but I think he was a really good defensive catcher, because if he wasn't, he wouldn't have played so long because he couldn't hit.
Well, he could, you know, he went through that phase that a lot of young catchers go through, is that they start out as they're hitters. They earn the job as hitters, and they keep the job because they can catch.
Or they get better and they develop. And of course he worked with some really talented pitchers as well.
He did too, and of course he has a. He was born on a lucky day, so you know all people right. born on that day tend to be, you know, above average intelligence and so on and so forth.
All right, I'm sensing something here about March 17th, but anyway, anyway, I think the way they have a lockdown on their catchers there, I just don't think they would let anybody. I think before we as fans and as media people would know about something, that they would know about it way before that, and they would make a change if there were really a problem with the catchers. And I just have to believe that it's something wrong with Nadose. But Craig, you're welcome to send us an MP3 and those numbers. I think they were great numbers that you brought up. And
besides, Craig, you got a great voice for radio or podcasts or whatever. So let's hear it. Let that voice out.
Anyway, we know that Mr. Nadose was sent down this past week. In fact, I think he was sent down the day that I went out to Tokyo Dome to do the talk with Carlos Rosas. So we'll see if he comes back. We'll see if he does well in the minors. We'll see if he even pitches. We'll see if he comes up with an injury. We'll see what the deal is. I think we will learn more. I don't think this is the end of this for any stretch of the imagination. But I just remember in 2007, I went to Seattle and I talked to J.J. Putz because Kenji Jojima was the catcher there as a Mariner. And I asked him about that relationship between pitcher and catcher. And just like Carlos said in the interview, he said, look, it's important if things aren't working out, nothing's going to go well when you're on the mound. Mm. If things are not, you have to be in sync at the very least. But I agree with that to some point. But again, you've got to execute pitches. And even if guys know what's coming, as long as you get it in a good location, you've got a chance to get them out. But home runs, you know, I think he gave up those four, Nadose gave up those four home runs in 2+ innings. And I said, maybe the catcher might get blamed for one of them, but not four, not all four.
Unless it was, Kevin Costner in Bull Durham saying, man, he hit that one like he knew it was coming. He knew what I was going to throw. So I did. He did. I told him.
Shut up, player to be named later. All right, let's go on and talk about Interleague. Now, the Dragons were surprisingly still in it when I started to put the notes for the show together, but they have since fallen out. The Oryx Buffaloes, though, my pick from the Pacific League is still there. And then the Giants, the Yomiuri Giants, are in first place in Interleague. So those two teams are about to have a showdown, probably which is going to end up being for the title. And that'll be this week. And, geez, Hiroshima, the Hiroshima Carp. I don't know. I'm just shaking my head every day. I don't even want to tweet about it. I feel bad. It's like I'm picking on them. I'm like, oh, the Carp are behind. What's new? You know.
Well, they did break their 9-game losing streak today.
They did win today. A big grand slam by Brad, friend of the program.
Eldred. Brad Eldred.
Brad.
And a home run by Naka Higashi.
Is that the leadoff home run?
No, that was the home run, and I think in the 8th inning, he had a 2-run homer, a pinch hit homer, and I think it was a pinch hit homer, and Wayne Grasek's first clue that the ball was juiced in 2009, I think it was last year, he said Naka Higashi hit a home run at Tokyo Dome, and he says, ball's juiced.
Something's wrong with this ball if this guy's hitting him out, yeah. Well, the Carp were 4-15, with this 9-game skid, but they ended that today on Sunday, so they're 5-15. I saw a note somewhere saying that was the worst a team has done is only 5 wins in interleague play, and it was the Carp in 2007. I don't remember where I saw the note, but I did see that. So, I wrote about it. They're not hitting. I wrote about it in a blog post. They're not hitting. They weren't pitching well. They weren't even playing good defense. They were getting outscored by a ton. This has just really been a nightmare for them. And I heard somewhere, it was on TV and in the papers, that Brian Bulletin made a comparison mentioning the Carp in the same sentence as the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sometime right around the time that they started interleague. And since about that time, they've basically gone belly. I wrote in my blog post that I said, I now believe the fish can drown.
Well, you know, they've been channeling the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees have been about as punchless as you can get the last about 5 weeks. So They're right in there. That was probably very astute on Mr. Bullington's part.
Well, I think this was about a month ago when everything was going good for the Carp. They were in first place. They were they were comfortably over 500. They looked like they were on the way to at least challenging for the Central League title and the pennant and hosting the second stage of the Climax Series in that beautiful stadium, which I haven't yet gone to, but I'm planning to try to get down there. And
one would think that if you're leading the league, you're challenging for the championship,
well,
I guess.
You know, hey, look, it's a long season, so just because they're up there doesn't mean they're going to stay, but they have a good chance.
Sure.
They were in good position to challenge for it.
As much as you can challenge in May, that's what they were doing.
Yeah, exactly. And then, what did you find when you looked at some of the numbers?
Well, I think, you know, I guess the numbers are obvious. Are obviously everything is, I think I tweeted yesterday, nothing's really changed this year. The Pacific League is as strong as ever.
Mm-hmm.
The Central League record looks exactly, the Central League they're four games back of 500 in Interleague this year, but it's the kind of four games back of 500 that you would expect from a weak team, from a bunch of weak teams, and that they've been lucky to win the close games and lose the games that they've got blown out of mostly. The runs, the Pacific League scored about 100 more runs.
Whoa.
The Giants, okay, this is what it looks like. The Giants are 14-6. They've scored 76 runs and allowed 62. That's good. That's good. It was really bad last week. They were, I think, one run plus. Oryx is 13-7. They've scored twice as many runs as they've allowed, 96-48.
Mm-hmm.
The Hawks are two games further back. They've scored 109 runs and allowed 84. The Dragons are half a game back of them. And they've scored 73 and allowed 72. This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
The Central League teams, there's only one Pacific League team that's, I think, minus in runs, and that's the Eagles. And in the Central League, it's 50-50.
Yeah,
so it's just bad balance, bad luck. There's no indication the Central League's any stronger than they've been. And, you know, and people, you weren't the only person who scoffed when I mentioned that, you know, who went, huh, when I said the Pacific League has to be stronger. But like I said, if that was a 500, if these leagues were the same strength, you'd expect to see the kind of record we're seeing now, about 1.5% of, there's about a 1.5% chance that these leagues are the same strength. Okay, and that next question is, if the leagues are the same strength, who wins the Japan Series? Wow.
Now you're just asking us to look into the future, which we have really, really have trouble seeing.
No, but I'm saying since Interleague started, when we could measure this, we've had Marines, Fighters, Dragons. We had Lions, Giants. We had Marines. We had Hawks. We had Giants, we had Eagles. So 3 out of 9 have been Central League winners.
Only 3.
yeah, only 1/3.
Yeah.
If the Interleague record this year reflected the actual runs the teams in the Pacific League and Central League have scored, the Central League has now scored 429 runs. The Pacific League has scored 515 runs.
Mm, almost 100 better, right?
Right, they've got a 482 winning percentage, the Central League does. If the winning percentage reflected the runs they've scored and allowed, they'd have a 410 winning percentage.
Yuck.
So that's what you would expect if the Central League does, if the weaker league does well, those are the records you'd expect to see. So, yeah. The Central League still is struggling. Now, speaking of struggling, you know, and the Hiroshima Carp, you know, I did, as I mentioned when we started Interleague, that the Carp had the worst record relative to the other league.
Mm-hmm.
Their record against their own league is so much better than their record in Interleague. So I called it the worst. I mean, there are teams with better interleague records and so on and so forth. The Swallows are the best because they have played only, you know, mediocre baseball against the CL, but they've really rocked against the PL.
Right.
Okay. So And I was thinking this gap because I remember Marty Brown, and when he was the manager of the Carp in 2008 and 2009, talking about how much they wanted to be, how much they wanted to face the best pitchers in the Pacific League, who at that time were Yu Darvish and Iwakuma. And I was thinking, and I seem to remember they beat them. They beat them pretty good. I think they beat them, when Marty Brown was the manager of the Carp. Since 2006, I don't have 2005 data. They played 6 games against Iwakuma and Darvish, and they won 4 of them.
That's those not bad.
Yeah. Okay, now in those 2 years, although the Carps' record has been horrible, although they were 27-10 in Interleague under Brown in 2008 and 2009.
Okay, 2008 and 9.
So the real culprit here, or at least the person responsible, ain't Marty Brown. It's the guy who took over in 2010 and who has managed the last 5 years of interleague play for the Carp.
Boom! I think you've blown Mr. Nomura up before on the show. No, so
I did. Yeah.
Well, remember he had
I remember his first year.
Yeah, remember he had the lineup card boo boo where he filled out the lineup card incorrectly.
That's not the reason for their poor record in interleague.
But that's the show that you blew him up on. So.
Oh, I blew him up a couple of times. He was doing weird stuff the first couple of years he's managed. So anyway, all I can think of is remember how much Trey Hillman told me how difficult it was in 2004 for his players to get used to playing against the other league that they didn't see. And so to combat that, he basically trained them from interleague from the start of camp, getting scouting reports on the Central League teams during preseason, you know, during the exhibition and practice games. They were getting advanced scouting on the Central League teams. And they did travel. They prepared for the travel extra, you know, they traveled a lot, and that's something that is tough for some teams to manage. And I'm guessing that what is hardest for the Carp is that whatever way they prepare to play the Central League, which has become very effective, it is not helping them. It's almost counterproductive when they get to interleague.
Yeah.
They can't apply the same methods, or it might involve travel because they don't normally fly. It might involve this or it might involve that. But I'm saying there's something weird that's going on, that the Carp are continuously bad. I mean, and they're really horrible if they're so bad and they were 17 games under 500 for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, Big Bad Brad saved them today with the Grand Slam. Now, I also like Oryx. I think they look good. I think they might be able to overcome the Giants when they play them. They got 2 games head-to-head this week. And the more I look at them, the better they seem to be. And the one stat that stood out for me that I saw with the Buffaloes was that Yuki Nishi leads the league in wins with 9. He leads the ERA race. And then their ace, Chihiro Kaneko, leads the league in strikeouts. He's got 117, and then their super setup guy Tatsuya Sato leads the league in hold points with 22, and the pen had not before Sunday allowed a run over 19 games.
Oryx's pitching has been super, you know, it's been super since last year, so that's not a surprise.
Not a surprise, but it's gotten better.
Yeah, it's gotten certainly that, you know, and Dixon's having a very good year. And it's like whoever they throw out there as their third or fourth starter does well. So, I mean, they're getting a lot of mileage out of everybody. Speaking of weird things about interleague and, you know, who's the best, you know, who's leading interleague and what teams has the most home runs in interleague?
No, trivia time is over. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know who you are and who got into Jim's body, but bring him back and get out of here. who's leading in home runs? I'd take a wild guess and say the Hawks.
Try the Hiroshima Carb.
No way. I would.
Oryx is second with 18. The Carp are number one with 22.
A lot of solo home runs, huh?
Yep. They've scored 36 of their runs were not by the guy who hit a home run. Isn't that pretty sad? I mean, that looks like, that was like Rock 10 today. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. A bunch of hits and nothing to show for it. And at the end of the day, you get a loss. Ugh.
Three bases. They left the bases loaded three times and had to score with two solo homers and lose 3-2. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So a couple of quick notes. Brian Wolfe of the SoftBank Hawks is going to be out for the season. He's having elbow surgery. I guess it's Tommy John for him as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but on a good note, the Yakult Swallows look like they're going to get Yoshinori Sato back this year.
He threw
on the farm and he threw 155K, topped out with his fastball. And I saw on Twitter that Tony Barnett said he's ready to pitch. Now I don't know if he means this year or we'll have to see what that means. But he was thinking about
maybe he meant in the beer softball league.
I want to find out if he's going to be back because I thought he wasn't going to be back this year. So that's good for them. And then Masanori Ishikawa of the Swallows, he threw another shutout, his second of the season recently. And that's after going years without one. So
he only went 1 year
for the Swallows. What's that?
He only went 1 year without one. You know, he had one in 2011. He had one in 2012. It just seems like years because every third or fourth game he gets lit up like, you know, ad for General Electric.
And then one correction from last week. I mentioned that Tony Blanco had missed the game that Yulieski Gurriel debuted in, the new Cuban player for the Yokohama Bay Stars. But Tony did play that day, so I missed him in the score box, so apologies for that. And then
John was being prescient.
Again?
Again. He's prescient all the time. When he's not precious, he's prescient. So, actually be prescient. And that was that Tony Blanco is now apparently out for a month or so.
He's got a bad wheel and he was deactivated. So
he's got a square wheel, I think, or a swollen wheel or whatever. Same problem that kept him out a month from middle of April to the middle of May, and looks like he'll be out till the middle of July.
Yeah, you get the feeling he rushed back because he didn't want his job to be stolen.
I don't know.
Okay, and then Seibu ace, I guess we have to call him the ace, Takayuki Kishi left the game the other day and had elbow pain, so we'll keep an eye on that. I know he was...
He threw today and apparently didn't have any problems, so...
Okay, well, that's good news for him. And I know that the Carp, and like we said earlier, they had lost some players. They've been suffering from a few injuries here and there, and one of their relievers who has emerged this year, Ichioka, I think it's Ryuji, had a bad shoulder, and he was deactivated. So a lot of injuries, a lot of arm situations that we got to hope the guys are getting better. But some guys are coming back, and some guys are leaving, so we'll see how that impacts the end of Interleague and then the second half of the season.
All right, John. Well, good job today.
All right.
Now,
good job to you.
I guess we got to get some more questions here, man.
Questions would be nice. You can send them to ykyujohn@gmail.com or leave some comments on our Facebook page. I know that Anthony Pang in Melbourne did ask, and he wanted to know if we plan out the interviews beforehand. And I did reply to him on Facebook, but I wanted to let the other listeners know, no, we don't.
That's a little ambitious, don't you think?
Yeah, Jim and I have to figure out when we're off and when we can go out to the park. But I can tell you that I am planning to go out to Tokyo Dome on Wednesday this week and talk to somebody with the Oryx Buffalo. So we'll see who it ends up being.
Okay.
All right.
You could be next on the show if you're an Oryx Buffalo.
Beware and don't run.
Don't run when you see me coming. If you see him waving a microphone at you. We need you. Come back.
All right. I'm going to go and I had to have my heart rebuilt after watching the Kings play in the Stanley Cup Finals. And I think I'm going to go pick it up tomorrow. I think it's all.
Were they playing in Brazil too?
No, they were playing in a place that's a lot cooler, as in hip, and temperature-wise.
Oh, okay.
All right, so it was a great season for my Kings, and I'm really happy, and I got some tweets and some congratulations from some friends, so thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And we're enjoying my hockey. It was a great season, but I'm going to keep enjoying my baseball. Please do the same.
All right, we'll be talking to you next week.
Enjoy your baseball.
Ciao.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.